All right, you guys are on the Nicholas Paul Arnold Hour, and I'm joined by Mr. Andy Wood. How are you doing today, good sir?
Hey man, how's it going? I'm good.
Doing good. I'm glad we were finally able to get connected. I know we've been talking about it a couple times for some time now, so I'm glad we were able to finally make it happen.
Oh, me too, dude. Yeah.
How's everything been going over in your side of the world? Or in you're in Tennessee, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm in East Tennessee, and you know, all things considered, trying to make some music, improve the studio, and I feel like I've been trying to just wrap my head around, you know, digital content on the pandemic version, I guess, as we would say.
that's for sure. Now, in case anyone doesn't know, like, Andy is ultimate, like one of the best guitarists I've heard in such a long time. You know, you play everything from like country to rock to jazz to fusion. You're one of those guitar players. Like, you are like a dying breed. There's not many players who are like well versed. And
thank you for that. I like to just blame musical schizophrenia.
Oh, is that what you call it? Musical schizophrenia?
Yeah, I guess so. I genuinely just love a lot of different music. And I listen to everything from Pavarotti to Debussy to Tony Rice to Ed Van Halen. I mean, I like music that is, there's only really two genres, right? I like it and I don't like it. Those are my genres.
Right. And I'd assume Holdsworth is up in that group too, huh? I can hear the influence on the Holdsworth.
It's funny. I
or maybe not.
Metal Fatigue and some of those records, you know, were outstanding. And Holdsworth was one of those guys that I listened to just to enjoy. I never really tried to tackle too much of his music. But
you need monstrous gorilla hands to play his stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And various Synthax devices and what have you. No, I generally always was just more blown away with what he could do. You know, I would just sit and
he was a visionary.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
You mentioned Synthax. I've wanted one of those things for freaking ever. They don't make them anymore. I mean, I can understand why, because they're a little ridiculous, but wouldn't you absolutely love to jam on one? Have you ever played one before?
I've never played one before. I can't imagine playing any Foo Fighters songs on that thing.
Well, I can't imagine playing anything but jazz fusion on those things.
Yeah, it was definitely the era of mid 70s, late 70s fusion into the 80s. Like that brought out so many cool different things, right? Because you'd have big rock bands, big arena rock bands, and fusion, I guess even back into the early 70s, fusion bands would like open for them, you know? And then, you know, right, at that point, the keytar was becoming a thing. You know, it's like,
right.
So as like musically astounding as it was, there were things that happened that were, you know, quirky and not comical, but quirky is the right word. You know what I mean? Like a Synthax or a keytar, they definitely belong on the same stage.
Well, I was born in 90, but I got the taste of the 80s when I was born, because the 80s sort of bled into the early 90s. And from what I gathered, the 80s were a weird time. Like the 80s were like civilization's like teen years, you know, when like you're a teenager and you're just like weird, or you know, anything that you don't like, anything that's not what you're into is lame. You know, like you're like, you know what I'm saying? Like the 80s seemed like that kind of time.
I was a child of the 80s. So I was born in the 80s, and man, I love it. Like retro culture that's made it
seem like a fun time. Now.
Yeah. It's just fun, man. And you know, it seemed like, musically there were so many things that were happening in so many different directions that were like all top 40. Like when I say that, I mean like George Strait, king of country music, was the 80s, right? You know, right. And then also in the 80s was, you know, She Blinded Me with Science, you know, and then in the 80s is Van Halen and Motley Crue. And also in the, you know, it's like, it seems like there were so many things that were so popular in so many different directions.
Right.
So I loved that. Like you said, the fun, encouraging, you know, it's like NASA and I don't know. It's just like the idea of discovery and exploration.
It was a time to be alive.
Yeah, it's so bumper sticker t-shirt cliche to say, but that's the way I think of it, and that's the way my brain thinks of it.
You know, I don't know if you know, but I play for the band Gemini Syndrome, and we just released two new music videos. And for one of them, it's called IDK, the letters IDK. And the guy who his name is Brian Cox. He edited our videos, and he totally retroed out the video. Like, I'll send it to you so you can check it out. See what I mean. But it's totally like lo-fi. He added like cool VHS effects, like the wavy kind of shaky sort of glitchy. You know, remember when like you'd watch TV or like movie or movies, like it had that lo-fi look.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
he did an amazing. I'll send it to you. You can see what I mean. Like, he did an amazing job, like making it look retro as hell. Like, he also had like a Tron, like a grid sort of look.
It's almost like the Stranger Things really captured a lot of that magic.
Yeah. And if you notice, a lot of people are trying to go retro back. Have you noticed like a lot of things?
Oh, totally. Like I love Thomas McLaughlin's stuff, because he's always wearing like the jumpsuits and like the Lamborghini Countach graphics and stuff like that. I love that.
It's kind of like everyone trying to look like there was a while where everyone tried to dress like it was the 50s. Remember, you know, like there was like a little few years back, like everyone dressed like James Dean. You know, now everyone's reverting back to the 80s.
I hope we stay there. I'm okay if everybody wants to dress like David Lee Roth. I'm okay with that.
It takes me back. It almost makes me sad because, like I said, I got a taste of the 80s when I was a little guy, because, you know, I remember things from the early 90s. Like Whitney Houston was my first and forever will be my very first celebrity crush. Like, and I watched our music video, and it makes me sad because I would give anything to hop into a time machine and just go back to like 93, 94 before everyone turned to dickheads. And, you know,
like, I mean, my thing is like, I would want to be 21 years old in 1984.
Oh, why is that?
Just because, I mean, I was infant at that point. It's like I was toddling around or whatever, but like to be 21 years old at the height of Van Halen, Motley Crue. Right. Yeah, dude, that's what I want. That's if I could do time machine, that would be it.
And that would
either be that or like,
well, it seemed like the 80s were.
Sorry, you faded out. It seemed like the 80s were what?
Sorry. I said also like the 80s seemed like the best time to be a musician.
Oh, there's some good times to be a musician. I don't know, dude. The 70s would be wicked. 60s would be amazing. I don't know. Like, I think, I don't know. There's great times to be musicians throughout, you know,
right.
The past.
Well, 80s was like the era, like was like the rock god era, you know, like the stacks where, you know, bands were making millions, you know?
Yeah. It was definitely the most decadent time in rock and roll.
Yeah. And, but, you know, it's okay because people adapt, people evolve, you know, mentally. And, you know, it's just, I feel like maybe nothing's changed. There's new rules to the game, if that makes sense.
I think that's just humanity's evolution. You know, it's like not right. To sound too macro scoped out or whatever, but I think that's just the way we work. You know, you think about new ways to play the game. It's like, could you imagine being the world's best blacksmith when Henry Ford did his thing? You know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, having said that, like, hopefully, you know, I hope everything is still working out for you. Like with like everything, all the nonsense going on, like hopefully, you know, it hasn't hindered your career in any way. Cause I know, you know, you stay busy, huh? Like, do you do a lot of, I'm guessing, session work, and you do your own music? Like, has that been the case? Hopefully.
So that's interesting. I have been very, very fortunate and very blessed, throughout this dark time.
Right. A weird time.
General, yeah. Weird time. Right. Yeah. In general. Yeah. I, for the past 7 or 8 years, I've toured professionally, big bands and artists and whatnot. And then I started making that transition into doing more and more of my stuff, you know?
Right.
And so, when we were getting ready to have a really great year with a ton of really great dates going over to Europe and all this kind of stuff, you know, 2020 hit.
Right.
With that said, my curve was to still create stuff, to make stuff.
Right.
I just had to pivot what that meant. Mentally, it's been challenging because I desperately miss the vibe of playing with musicians in front of people. That's not been an easy pill for me to swallow. That's tough. What has been very warm and fuzzy has been the more digital aspect of the guitar community welcoming me. You know, it's, I guess by that I mean typically YouTube and Instagram, that community belongs more to the Fluffs and Olas and Ben Ellers of the world, you know, Tyler, I guess the world knows him as Music Is Win, but like Tyler asked me to play on his record before, you know, COVID hit or whatever. And, you know, I've always been a live guy. I've been a guy that toured and, you know, bus, airplane, even, and lucky to play a lot of arenas and big stuff. So I didn't really create digital content. So I was very, you know, I don't like to say blown away, but like felt good to know that the community, the guitar community was like, hey man, we'd love to have a YouTube channel from you. You know what I mean? So like I jumped up, I spiked really hard. I went from, you know, a handful of subs to, you know,
because you know how to play. Like you're a damn good player and you don't try and sound like everyone else. Like, you know, I will say I do hear the Eric Johnson influence. That's not a bad thing.
But yeah, if anybody listened to me, they'd be like Brent Mason, Eddie Van Halen, Eric Johnson, no question. Like,
yeah, it's like, you don't try to sound like everyone else. Like, and if you do like a fusion, because have you noticed like fusion jazzy stuff like became popular out of nowhere? Everyone's trying to sound like Holdsworth, you know. Like, it just I remember like a couple like a decade ago, you know, it wasn't like this sort of stuff, like the shred, not shreddy, but like the virtuoso sort of style of playing like became very popular out of nowhere again, you know?
Yeah.
It was like grunge rock and, you know, and it turned into like regular. And then everyone, like their playing became, I feel like in the 90s into like the 2000s and mid 2000s, like it evolved from like, you know, hair metal to rock to grunge rock to hard, you know, like it was like simpler and simpler. And then now, then everyone's getting more and more dynamic, if that makes sense. Like, you know, everyone's going back to the technical stuff.
I think right now a lot of people are trying to prove that they have seat at the table, or and by that I don't mean that as far as me sitting at the table. I mean that like prove to themselves that they belong at the table, right? That's like a really heady kind of way of looking at it, because to me everybody's got their own seat. You know what I mean? But I feel like the nature of social media right now and us putting so many values on how many numbers and clicks and likes, like that, like that's become this thing where it's like, every video needs to be the most incredible thing that I've ever done. And it's like, you know what I've enjoyed is more raw stuff lately. I've enjoyed guys just, you know, posting up camera phone audio and stuff like that, to where I can hear like the reality of it all, you know, like the organic aspect of it, because things are just kind of edited to death right now for the goal of having more clicks and likes. And the reality is, do you think, I mean, like, let's just call a spade, you know, Eric Johnson, whose name we've been talking about, he doesn't have 600,000 followers. Nobody is in danger of ever forgetting who Eric Johnson is, and Eric Johnson is a legend. So it's like that right there proves just how insignificant social media really is, really, you know, because the reality is if you're legendary and you make a statement, I'm quoting my bud, Mr. Bonamassa, he's got a saying that he said to me a couple of times. He's like, man, I need to know somebody's statement. What's your statement? You know, it's like everybody's good. Like in today's world, everybody's good everywhere. Everybody can play. So now what's your statement? What's your body of work? What's your sound? Who do you, you know, the most important thing we could all strive for right now is to sound like ourselves.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you're absolutely right.
Versus like striving to create the next Blitzkrieg of prog metal, or the next neo soul video that goes viral, or the next blah blah blah, or the like. Everybody's trying to be like, this worked for Mateus, I better do it. This worked for Tosin, I better do it. It's like, dude, that what works is just be yourself. You know
exactly.
I had a great call with Nick Johnston a couple of weeks ago, maybe a little bit longer. I guess it was right before the holidays. Nick's a sweetheart and a great player, and we catch up occasionally, you know, every now and then, just to see how each other's doing. He's got a project coming out that he's going to be singing on, and we were talking about that, and he said, man, and this is months before Mateus stepped away, and he was just like, I just didn't post. He's like, I'm not in this whole, like, I better post today, people will forget about me. He said almost the same thing. He's like, nobody's ever going to forget who Joe Satriani is, and Joe Satriani doesn't post every day. You know what I mean? And it was like, just hearing Nick be so cavalier about it, I was just laughing and loving it, you know. But well, it's something, it's a cycle we all live in. And unfortunately, right now, it's our only outlet because of the pandemic. So, yeah, I have enjoyed seeing guys like Andy Timmons do concerts weekly, or seeing Mark Letarte posted on his Instagram a little more often or whatever. It's like, yeah, of course, I love that. But, right. You know, I definitely the guys that we're all talking about right now in this moment, in this conversation, at least, these are guys that have albums and songs. When you go see them live, they have a signature song that right. You want to hear them play. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we all need to be aware that, like, the window of a 8-minute walkthrough video, or the top 5 reasons that's this, or a 40-second Instagram clip, that's all fine and good, and it's fun, and it's a window. But, like, if you're really wanting to feel fulfilled, right, artistically, right. I don't think that's going to come from the amount of likes. I think that's going to come from a different place. And for me personally, that comes from a body of work. And I also find that that kind of body of work mentality, for lack of better words, yields very great results. Like, look at John Mayer or Joe Bonamassa. It's like, these guys, when you go look or you go to their show, Joe's going to play Slow Gin. You know what I'm saying? Right. He's got the signature song. You go see the Stones, they're going to play Jumpin' Jack Flash. You know what I mean? It's like, you want that. Like the Cliffs of Dover, the Brent Mason Hotwired, the, you know, Electric Gypsies. It's like all these iconic songs. I think that comes from a different search and a different starting point than, I hope I make a video that gets a lot of clicks or likes.
You're absolutely right. But the thing about those, these players that we're talking about, they started in a time where they don't have to worry about numbers. But unfortunately, a lot of new musicians, like guitar players in particular, or any musician in this generation, I feel like this is their only way of making that happen, because
I don't know about that. I'm gonna play devil's advocate. Like, I don't think Larkin Poe. Do you know who Larkin Poe are? They're fabulous sisters. Blues kind of rock kind of thing. One of them is married to Tyler Bryant. See, that's the funny thing, right? Like, they're really big as far as, like, they're the kind of act that's gonna put butts in seats at a theater, like a Jason Isbell, right?
Okay.
So Jason Isbell is going to play theater, like big rooms. You know what I mean? He's not playing to 150 people, right?
Right.
The flip is, they don't have these like gargantuan, you know, 3.7 million followers, right?
Right, right,
so,
right.
So I think it's like scoping out to, you know, to remember that, like, you know, Billy Strings, like, he's not a YouTube player. He's not an Instagram player. That's a guy that plays shows. And when he plays a venue, it's going to be a couple thousand people there to see him play. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't think that, let me rephrase that sentence. I think that there's a bit of a misconception on the value of numerics in the digital medium. I think there's a bit of a misconception there. Not to say that it isn't important or it doesn't look good, but it's a bit like a resume. Just like a resume, but it doesn't justify anything. Like Dave Grissom or Allen Hines, these are monster players that, you know, play live. They play, as Ben Eller says, they play standing up. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's the term that I like. It's like, yeah, man, it's fine to have a very successful YouTube channel, but, you know, playing standing up is something that, you know, Tosin Abasi does. Misha These are guys from that are modern internet children.
Right. You know? Right.
But they're not considered YouTube players. They have, you know, a bit of a bigger statement again, you know.
You're absolutely right. And I think I can, I'm in that same generation, the internet children. But I chose to go the route that you're familiar with, because I think I overthink things a lot, and I have the fear of if I typecast myself as a social media artist or a YouTube artist, that's all I'm going to get, because I don't want that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not interested in the YouTube channel. I mean, I'm sure it helps, but a lot of people, I think, get stuck on that. And if that's their thing that works for them, then fine. That works for them.
Well, it's easy. I think it, maybe it's easy to get stuck on that. It's easy to feel good. I mean, I would be lying to say that it didn't feel good when people liked my stuff or said something nice about a clip or something like that. That's amazing. It feels good, right?
Right.
So that's one of those things that it's easy to let that become what dictates your art and your content. Like, oh man, this felt so good that they liked this. I better do another one, and I'd make this and make this. I think easy to fall into that. And I'm not kidding or saying it bad of it. I'm just saying, like, I can definitely see how maybe you set out with a different journey, but you got that. Now it's like, now you're doing a YouTube channel. It's like, that's easy. It's easy to see how that, that click like mentality make you feel good. And you want to chase that dopamine drip. You know, I think that's a different origin point than say Tim Pierce or Rick Beato. I think Rick's at it very much so from
Rick Beato.
He's at it.
He's become like the elder, like the town elder for the music. You know what I'm saying? He's like that.
It's because he's trying to share knowledge, and he's really trying to educate. I don't think he set out to be like, I want to have millions of subscribers. I don't think that ever crossed his mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's like a little town wise man.
Rick was a successful record producer and engineer long before YouTube. So his career was not hinge upon it. And I think that yielded great results with the YouTube channels because he wasn't trying to career YouTube. And let's be real. If anybody's listening out there and you're thinking about social media and YouTube, and you're going to, you have to have about 1 million views to get $1,200. So just be aware that, like, YouTube is no different than a Spotify or a Apple Music or any of those services where you get paid, you know, fractions of pennies on the tens of dollars, right?
Right, right.
The flip is it's a great medium to share your journey, your story, your personality, your music, your art. And that's your storefront, okay? By that, I mean, once you get somebody interested in what you do, where are you going to take them? You know, and under a non-pandemic scenario, my hope is that you're going to come see a show. Under a pandemic scenario, my hope is that you'll, you know, jump over to my website and sniff around at all the different things that I've got over there, from live concert, for sale, albums, lessons, Axe FX patches, backing tracks. You know, it's like
those I want to check out.
Yeah, it's like to me, that's, yeah, it's like my thing is like all of those outlets, like YouTube and Instagram, I want you to come hang out at andywoodmusic.com where there's all the stuff that I think is my statement. That goes back to like, yeah, man, I've really tried to pour myself into albums and have original songs that people, you know, I know I'm a bit off topic, but
no. It's all connected. No matter.
It is right. It's all
connected. It's like a big umbrella. I have my love-hate relationship with social media. The love part is how you feel. I feel like social media has sort of humanized artists. Because, you know, remember back in the day, like before you started your career, or, you know, you would listen to your heroes like Johnson. Like, I'm sure when you were younger, you thought, man, it'd be so cool to talk to him or meet him, or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, I mean, Jimmy Page is not even a real person. He's like a deity. You know what I mean? It's like, I totally know what you're saying. Like some of these people, like Joe Perry, he's bigger than a human can be. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And now social media acts as a medium to connect.
Right.
Everyone. And, you know, and it's, I don't know. I mean, for, it's social media has been a blessing for me and a curse, you know, it's connected me to, you know, like many talented musicians like you, or people who I've looked up to, who I now consider buddies, you know?
Right. Same way for me, man. Absolutely.
It takes away that mystery that, oh, what are they like, you know, real life, or, you know, and there are some people who, you know, probably use it for their ego. You know, like I always told myself, if like I'm not famous, I'm not famous, like, but the band I'm in is, you know, I'm fortunate to landed a gig for a big rock band, and they have their fans. And I told myself, just if fans ever reach out to me, which they do now, I said, I'm just going to be a nice person. Just be cool. I'm going to be a likable person. And I don't know about you, but like I tend to not talk about music if the fans ever reach out to me. Do you ever find yourself doing that, or, you know, cause I would just hate for someone to say, yeah, that Nicholas Parnold's a real douche. I would just hate say that, you know, I don't act too cool to talk to people. So yes, what's your take on that?
I love that. You raised a couple of really good points that I want to touch on, was like the humanization of it. And then how specifically I handle that. Right. I think that's the two big things. The humanization of it is one thing, because I know some of my heroes now. I just got an email confirming that the John Petrucci camp that I'm part of.
You're doing that, huh?
Yeah, I'm teaching at the one this year, and it's confirmed. It's on. It's amazing. And John has been super kind to me over the past few years, and listed me in magazine articles and stuff like this. And it's almost surreal, because I worship those Liquid Tension records. You know what I mean? I know everybody knows it from Dream Theater, but like Liquid Tension is what spoke to me. Right. And so here's the thing about the humanizing of it. John's a dude. You're right. Absolutely. He's the regular guy. And like at these camps and stuff, I've seen him like grilling for people. He's the nicest guy on the planet. I've met him a couple of times. So nice. Here's the thing though. When he puts on the guitar and steps on that stage, he's a deity again. And right, that is like this, like immeasurable amount of artistic statement.
Right.
That I go back to. And that's where we go back to my favorite line of today, which is he plays standing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he goes out on a stage, it's a different guy than the guy that was hanging out with you and talking to you. You know what I mean? And that's the magic. That's the real magic, you know? So when you talk about the other side of your sentence that was about, you know, being cool and hanging out and talking about music or not talking about music, you're absolutely 1000% right. I treat things like Facebook and Twitter as avenues a bit more for me to talk about Marvel Comics and Xbox. Right. And Destiny and sports cars and Chicago Bears and all the things that I like in life. However, I think a lot of people want that chance to talk about music, you know? Right. And so I guide that crew to Patreon. Not necessarily, I'm just trying to, it's not a matter of monetary gain, even though music is my career. So I try to keep everything in that lane, at least from that perspective. Right. Because it is my livelihood. And, so what I do in turn is I try to treat things like Patreon no different than it is like being on tour. Like I upload several times a week on lessons. I let the patrons, dictate what those videos will be. And, when someone asks a question, I try to make a video within the next 24 hours to get back to them. And then once a week for my upper tier subscribers, my combo tier, which is like a $25 and higher subscription. One of the things that I offer is a weekly Zoom hang that's just for them. So we get on Zoom and that's something that those folks can have that, you know, that's just one-on-one time. We talk about music or anything, but I usually come to the table every week with a different topic. And then we will, kind of riff on it for a couple of hours. And, that's a way that I feel like I'm giving in exchange for the monetary subscription. I feel like I'm giving the one thing that I can't get back, which is my time, very much like I treat it like being on tour or something, like you pay the ticket and then you get my time. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so that is something that I feel like I'm trying to offer a value, not just, like you said, not just waste people's time or waste people's money.
Right. Right?
Like I want people to have that value. If they definitely know that they want to talk to me about, you know, like compressor right. pedals or whatever, you know what I'm saying? It's like, dude, I want them to get the most valuable time talking about compressor pedals as possible. And right. in today's world, it's like taking advantage of technology. You can do that. That wasn't available 15 years ago. I mean, God, you can take a lesson from Brent Mason, from Paul Gilbert, you know, like, it's unbelievable right. the world we live in, you know, and that's something right. I've never imagined, you know, as a guy, you know, teenager learning how to play.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, and that's all this like tied together. That's the love part of social media that I appreciate, you know, and like it.
Yeah.
Like, do you ever find yourself like I do you ever find like fans or anyone who messages you, like, do they ever like talk to you about like just like the most like not random, but just like the most like wide like spread of topics? Like I have fans who message me and they feel like a sense of closeness to me, like where they open up to me, talk to me about their problems. I think it's because I make myself available to them. And I think that's a good way to go about it.
And I think that is a good way to go about it. And that's something I encourage everyone to do. If it's genuine, that's not something that you can fake.
Right.
If you're socially introverted and you hear this conversation and you think, oh, now I have to put on this hat, this guise of, you know, warm. It's like, dude, you got to be you. Because the one thing the entire planet somehow has the ability to do is sniff out a falsehood, sniff out right. fakery. Like we don't know it. We don't know what it is, but when it's fake, we can all kind of sense it. You know what I mean?
Of course.
And they try too much.
They try too hard to be cool.
Or, you know, you don't even, yes, I agree 100% with that, but it could also just be a matter of like, you're trying to be something that you're not. Like if it's like
ego driven,
if you see, oh, maybe not even ego driven. Maybe it's not that. Yeah. Like, I, of course, that's the easiest thing to look at, of course. But I'm trying to think of an example is like, what if you saw the way Mark Letary handles his social media? Mark's real warm and fun and cutting up and joking and everything. And you're socially introverted. And so you try to be warm and fun and cutting up because you think that's the way it's supposed to be because Mark's like that. I think that's a dangerous path. And that's not ego driven. I think that's right. like someone who's learning, you know, and I guess maybe that's right. what I'm talking about is like,
yeah. you know, who's a good example of that?
Learning,
you know, it's a good example of that, Devin Townsend, you know, Devin Townsend, right. You know,
he's a constant cut up.
Yeah. I've become acquainted with him throughout the years, you know, and he's the nicest guy, but he's a social, like he's socially awkward, not awkward because he's gotten better, but there's times where it's like self-deprecating where he like, not puts himself down, but he acknowledges that he's not like, like the popular guy, you know, he's sort of like a social nerd, you know,
well, you know, and some people just don't, they don't have to be that. Like Devin doesn't have to be that because he found the avenue to create and make a statement and be himself through
and
the
people love him for who he is.
Yes. Right. It's often, again, it goes back to authenticity. I think that's what, is magic about the guys that I think have it, like whatever you call it, like watching Andy Timmons play his favorite songs from the 60s.
Right.
That's like magic. Like right. it can't be put into words. Doesn't matter if you're seeing it on a screen, it's a lot better in person, but right. it's still magic on a screen. I think that magic is Greg Koch every morning posting whatever random clip is in his playing,
right?
That's just like Merle Travis picking her slide, picking crazy jokes and stuff.
Right.
But I also think that it can come from a very sincere, more reserved place. Like, right. This kind of artist I would consider maybe like Miles Kennedy, Like, he's not a social, he's not on social media, like being a social butterfly, but when he releases something or is playing, there's like, there's this just 500 tons of authenticity and genuine and,
right.
and raw talent and that voice and that playing. It's like, dude, there was a video that he did. He's like strumming around on one of those PRS SE acoustics. And it's just like, God almighty, like you have it, like right. whatever it is, you have it.
Right.
And I guess my point is to anyone listening, don't worry about what your heroes do and how they do it. Learn from them, enjoy their art, acquire what you can from their, right. their wisdom, and then let yourself try to allow yourself to find your own way. And right. I think to tie that into the most popular topic I get asked about is alternate picking. A lot of people love to talk about that with me. I never worried about what my right hand looked like. I never even thought about it. And now when I reverse engineer this stuff to talk about it, maybe for Troy Grady or some of these channels, the number one thing I say is like Jimmy Herring, Steve Morse, Al DiMeola, John Petrucci, Guthrie Govan, they're freak show alternate pickers and none of their hands look the same. So stop obsessing over the whole,
right?
Well, so-and-so holds his hand like this. This is how I have to do it. It's funny that that's such a metaphor for social media.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I agree that I feel like too many people like worry about the little things, and really people should be focusing on what the left hand is doing.
Focusing on internally, just focusing on the sound of the guitar in your head. Right. What's the music in your head? What's right. the sound of that?
Right.
Now chase that thing. That's really where that magic will come from.
Right.
Obviously people, you know, with anyone, you can hear someone's influences. I listen to Jimmy Herring and I, of course, can hear Steve Morse. It's right, right there. I can hear Dwayne Allman. You know, I can hear it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I hear Jimmy Herring. He sounds like Jimmy. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right, right,
and,
right.
And we all pull from our influences. But the, you know, the best influence we can have is before you start to play the guitar, before you even play a note on it.
Right.
What's the sound in your head? What's right. the song in your head? What's the riff in your head? Now chase that for a little bit. Like that's the right. most valuable practice on the planet.
Right. Exactly. Right. And, I'm buddies with, one of the greatest best piece of advice I've ever gotten. I've been fortunate enough. I have the habit of volunteering people to be like my older brothers or like dad figures. I sort of, without even them asking, I just sort of like, I meet people who I've looked up to and I become buddies with them and I sort of volunteer them without them asking. And I always get such good, like big brotherly advice from professional musicians. Cause I'm only 30.
Right.
And, one of the best pieces of advice that I've gotten was from my favorite singer. I always talk about it cause I don't fanboy. It's just, I appreciate him as an artist so much. And he's one of the main reasons why I told myself that should fame ever find me or I have fans who message me or reach out to me, I'm going to be super nice and cool, is because I was treated this way. And I always talk about it because it just means so much to me. His name's Clint Bogue. He's the singer of the Australian band called The Butterfly Effect. Absolutely. You should check them out. Like one of my favorite singers ever. If you want to talk about a guy who sings and performs with passion, like with sings with raw emotion, watch him. Like you can see it in his face. He's like, you know, eyes closed. He's remembering anything he's singing about. He's feeling it. And his music helped me get through kind of a shit time for a couple of years. And I was fortunate enough, like I said, going back to what I said earlier, social media connected me to him. So that's part of the love hate relationship that I have with social media. And it turns out it was almost fate because, you know, a few years ago, he came out to America, came out to LA for the NAMM or Anaheim for the NAMM convention in 2017. So we planned on meeting. It was just perfect timing. And I hit him up for vocal lessons and we ended up connecting as friends. And when we did meet for a vocal lesson, he even said to me, you know, take what I teach you, like the techniques and everything. He has like an amazing head voice, just amazing. And he told me, take these techniques and make it your own. Kind of going back to what you were saying about how take what you can from your influences and find out what you can do with it as an individual.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we were just talking about Petrucci, man. Like that's Petrucci. Like right. I can hear some Al DiMeola, I can hear some Steve Morris, I can hear some Yes and Can.
But Petrucci though.
But dude, it's John. Like he figured out, okay, man, this is all the stuff I love. Now I've got to take it to a place that I hear, you know?
Right. And the best thing I'm sure a guitar player can hear is when someone says, "Oh, I know you're playing when I hear it."
Oh, it's the biggest compliment on the planet. That is the biggest. The only thing that make you feel better than that is if you see somebody comment on somebody else's thing and go, "Oh man, that sounds like a so and so lick."
Oh right, yeah, I'm sure that's happened to you. I would imagine.
Yeah, it has, and I think that's one of the warmest feelings I've ever had was when somebody was commenting on somebody else's thing. They're like, "Oh, dude, that sounds like an Andy Wood lick." I was just like, "Whoa."
Right.
You know, and you know what that did is that made me look introspectively and go, what have I done to make me sound like me, and how can I triple down on it? You know,
right.
How can I triple down on the things that are me? And like, I think the number one thing that's in my playing is the big Southern influence. You know what I mean? Right. I definitely have that thing, but
you don't overdo it. There are some
No. I mean, like, I had to play for, you know, I was playing Creed tunes with Scott, you know, it's like, you can't play a bunch of Southern licks over that stuff. You got to try to play that stuff with that kind of delivery, you know, and that's, I guess that's a different hat though, right? Like when you're stepping into the sideman gig.
I know what you mean about that Southern feel, but some players just overdo it too much. It's like, all right, yeah, we get it. You can do chicken picking. We get it.
Well, I think that's the thing, right? It's like chicken picking and telly stuff kind of got to the point where it was almost like a gimmick and like comical. Whereas like when you hear,
don't get wrong, you have to be a good player to play that shit, but
yeah, but it like, it's really, it can get corny. You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah.
Like it's like, there's two different kinds of like old timey music. There's the kind that like is on the Looney Tunes cartoon when they're like sawing on a fiddle and it sounds real comical. And then there's like Bela Fleck and Sam Bush and Jerry Douglas, and there's nothing funny about that. They're just a bunch of freak level musicians playing whatever you want. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think when I say the Southern influence, let's not just say chicken picking, right? Like I definitely huge Allman Brothers fan. I'm a huge Marshall Tucker fan.
Right.
Obviously, you know, Mark O'Connor and Tony Rice and Bela Fleck and the Newgrass Revival and all of that stuff, Del McCurry, like all of that's like kind of acoustic music. But then, you know, when I think of Southern, I think of the Dixie Dregs and Steve Morse. Like that's a hugely Southern sound in my mind.
That's more
on the nose of fusion, especially the Dregs, you know. And same with Jimmy Herring, you know, it's like that's an incredible fusion player that, you know, he's got that Southern accent, you know.
Right. And going back to what you were saying, how everyone's going through like the fusion phase, like the prog phase, like where do you see music going now? Like where do you see the next?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. It's funny. A lot of times things can go through waves as far as fads. On the scoped out version, obviously, but like even scoped in, like things will be really popular for like 2 weeks. There'll be the whatever challenge.
Right.
And then like 3 months later, there's the whatever challenge.
And I think
then there's another whatever challenge.
That's where musicians make that mistake. Like green musicians who chase the fads.
Well, maybe it's putting a priority on things that are meant to be fourth or fifth tier.
Right.
Like maybe, when Josh Smith makes a video, and it's Josh doing, say, the, you know, whatever. Like, he's done one of those challenges. Like, he challenged all of us, and all of us chimed in, and it was super fun, right? It was like a 12-bar challenge, I think, was Josh's. The thing is like, we all did that as something we did, you know, like 3:30 in the afternoon, just kind of sitting around in our, you know, hanging, right? That's not something that, like, we got obsessed over and like, oh, man, it's got to be, you know, a million takes with high-quality production and, like, 4K video. Like it wasn't that kind of statement. I think that's where you're talking about with like being green in developing your own art is maybe putting too much emphasis on the wrong kind of thing, because a challenge isn't going to stick around. But if you put that kind of energy into a song or an album,
Right.
Yeah. Now you're talking. You know what I mean? Because
exactly.
Josh Smith is Josh Smith because of songs and albums.
He absolutely I saw him at the LAM show in 2015. I was just standing right next to him. He's just shredding. That was the first time I ever discovered him. And he is an absolute shredder. Not even just like wanker, but like just he just knows music so much, and his jazz and blues influence, you know, really. Like, I know his playing when I hear it. He's one of those other players that, like, I know him when I hear it. Like a Stevie Ray Vaughan or a Hendrix. Like, you just know he's playing.
Yeah, you can just kind of hear it, man.
Yeah, and he, and like you, he's just a live player, like you're saying. You know, you play shows, and that just seems like that's his gig, too.
Yeah, yeah. Luckily, we've got to do a one or two together. I hope when the pandemic lets up, we can all do a lot more.
Do you know who John Holt is by any chance? Do you know him? Big Swedish dude, guitarist.
I can't remember. There's several Swedish guys that I follow on Instagram, that are all mutants, like just complete mutants.
You have to check him out. He's a buddy of mine for years, and he's one of those very knowledgeable players who just knows their shit, like another you, pretty much, you know, like or Josh Smith. Like, he's up there with you guys, and he's a cool guy. Like, him and I, we talk about Dr. Steve Brule all the fucking time.
I love Steve Brule. That's my guy. The world needs Steve Brule more than it needs Fox News or CNN. You know what I mean? Oh, on both sides of the political spectrum, let's just turn them both off and let Steve Brule narrate all of our activities. I would endorse it 10,000%.
Honestly, like, I mean, say what you want about everything going on. Like, I think we're better off listening to Dr. Steve Brule instead of Dr. Fauci.
I stay non-political. I stay pretty non-political.
And that's another thing I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
What is this thing where not even just musicians, but celebrities in general, they think that they're using their social media as a platform to sort of push agendas or push their views on people. And it's weird how people are just sort of, have you noticed fans or people, they're just taking the bait? Like, oh my God, Lady Gaga's against guns, so I hate guns.
I don't know if that's the case. You gotta remember that artists are people, and
right.
And you gotta remember, man, like, politics is rock and roll.
Let's right.
be very aware that, like, you know, Bob Dylan in Vietnam or like Rage Against the Machine. It's like, dude, you take politics out of rock and roll, and you just lost a huge life force of rock and roll.
So it's always been like this.
I mean, absolutely. I think the thing you got to remember is we all have to remember that if we don't like what someone has to say, we don't have to listen.
Well, right? Of course. Yeah.
And that's a big problem is immediately in today's digital world, everybody's so eager to jump in and throw their opinion into the ring on their, you know, so-and-so's page. Like, I see Tom Morello get attacked all the time, and it's like, dude, this guy, outside of being a musician of a band that made its success off of political lyrics, dude, he went to Harvard for political science. This is not an uneducated guy. So if anybody's going to have a political opinion, it's like, maybe the guy from Harvard would be one of this. but again, that's just my opinion about one guy. This is all just my opinion about rock and roll and politics. But man, look at the overtones throughout the past 60 years. I mean, even blues was a music built out of oppression in a lot of ways.
Right. Yeah.
And that oppression doesn't just mean one thing. The oppression of alcoholism can write a great blues song, Life by the Drop.
Right.
You know what I mean? That there you go. I didn't even have to think about it. You know what I mean? And when we hear the word oppression, immediately we go to like, oh, blues, Delta slavery. It's like, yeah, man, it can go there. That absolutely is. You can draw a line. Absolutely.
Right.
But, you know, it can be in a lot of different formats. And when you say, you know, an artist uses their platform to push their agenda, I think that's the point. I think that's the point of it, whether you're super left or super right.
Right.
I mean, John Rich is one of the most conservative super right guys in the openly. Right. And then, you know,
which is career suicide, apparently.
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, he's still writing big country songs, and he's, you know, big and rich is not, I mean, it's like the dude's wrote every, I mean, he's wrote a ton of songs and he's still creating his thing. He's super right wing. And then you go to Jason Isbell, who's super left, you know? And to me, regardless of if I agree or disagree, I try to keep at the forefront of like, man, I have the choice to consume anyone's opinion that I want and turn off anyone's opinion that I don't want. And it helps me stay in a healthier place. But if I were to say, don't, you know, a movie star shouldn't use their platform to push their political agenda. Hey man, that's their thing. I think that's the beauty of it. Like, hey, I may not agree with you, but go for it, dude.
Well, it seems like that's not so much that's the problem. It's that fans are – here's my problem, not with what you're saying, but my problem with that scenario is fans or people of the musician or celebrity, they go to them to find out how to feel about things. People don't think for themselves anymore, and that's my problem with it.
Well, I think that's the nature of like where we're at right now, where we're desperately need in all of our lives of acceptance and feeling included and feeling like we have a belonging. I think that's something that's, you know, a human nature. That's a core fundamental thing that we desire. And then when you compound that and make that more complicated with things like upvotes and likes and, and like you said, the humanization, you can immediately talk to your heroes. It's like, yeah, man, you get in some pretty serious emotional territory really quick without even thinking about it.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And when you say a fan doesn't know how to think for themselves, it's like, man, that fan may be in a dark spot. They may be in a bright spot. And like we never know what anybody on the other side of that keyboard is going through. You know, I actually just did an episode on my YouTube channel about mental health and social media. And I had, instead of me rattling off my opinions, I thought the wisest thing I could do was get an expert in addiction and a professor at the University of Tennessee. And she came in and we did a Zoom call and it was amazing. So if anyone out there is kind of struggling with any aspect of social media, I would advise you to watch that episode and listen to what her name is, Stephanie Weatherstone. Have a look at that. We talk about all kinds of things that are really personal to the musician, which is like, you know, the how much emphasis we put on likes, how the negative comments can hurt you, why we're posting what we're posting, the obsession of being on our phone for 3 hours a day. You know, it's like all of this,
like stuff, all day long,
all of that stuff goes to what you're talking about when you see one person. I think your exact words were take the bait, and that could take the bait on a negative side where they are, they're ready to argue with their hero, or taking the bait on a positive side where they're ready to stand in their hero's army and attack whoever their heroes are talking about. Like taking the bait is a very, broad term.
Right.
Right. And I think that comes from a source of this whole mess that we're in, and then let's just put a cherry on top called a pandemic. It's just like, what is happening, you know?
Right.
So yeah, definitely check out, if anyone's out there curious about this stuff, check out that episode of The Woodshed. Yeah, there's a lot of good answers there, a lot of good info.
That's a clever name too, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was like, there's something my granddad always said about practicing. He said, oh, I got to get in the woodshed, you know. And my granddad taught me how to play. Unfortunately, he passed away about a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that.
Oh man, it hit me so hard. It still hurts. You know, I don't think it'll ever not hurt. But
which got you started, huh?
Yeah. He got me started. Me and my cousin, we started about 5 years old, 6 years old, playing fiddle tunes, bluegrass and stuff. But he would always say the woodshed. Obviously, my last name is Wood, and you know, we're thinking of ways to, you know, when you're coming up with signature products and stuff. We just released a compressor. I was like, oh man, you know, the woodshed compressor.
So,
you know,
so tell me about the pedal, right? Like an actual compressor pedal or an actual compressor?
It's a compressor pedal.
Oh, okay.
But it's aimed to be and perform a little more like those studio style compressors, the, you know, Joe Meeks or Distressers or 1176s or any of those. It's like the thing about pedal compression is a lot of times it'll shave a ton of your top end off and take away a lot of your transients, you know? So usually the way around that is Big Voltage. At least that's what I've always found. Like, I've always been a big fan of like 18 volt compressors and stuff like that. So we found a way to, you know, use some secret sauce, some of that brilliant, spur engineering to, get this little thing to do what I like. And it sounds really great.
Well, hopefully next year, NAMM will be around and you can maybe display that.
Oh yeah. It's already for sale. I was super blown away. Sold out of the first batch within like a week.
Oh, really? Something. Oh, that's
cool. Yeah, it's unbelievable. But again, that just I'm super thankful right now. I keep taking myself back to that in the past couple of weeks where I've been dealing with a lot. Right. Very blessed that the guitars and the compressors so well received from the community. You know,
right? And that, I'm happy to hear that, and I'll definitely check that out. One thing I do want to check out, though, I'll have to sign up for your pay. I want to Patreon. I want to check out those Axe Effects tones.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you're a patron, you don't even have to buy them because I just post them on there at any tier. And there's I think I started Patreon last March, and there's over 200 posts on there. So
wow, that's you can do some amazing things with the Axe Effects. I personally prefer it over Kemper, not because of quality, because Kempers are amazing, but I like you have more options because with Axe Effects, because you have a synth block, you have all these different components in the chain compared to a Kemper.
Yeah, and it's different. They're definitely different pieces of gear. I prefer Axe Effects, no secret. Anybody that follows me knows that's what I prefer.
You have a very warm sound. Like, I love your tone. It has a lot of sustain to it, and because you do a lot of legatos and stuff, and at least from what I've seen, it's just a very warm, thick sound.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, it's funny. The Kemper actually is really great for like.
Old school producers.
Yeah, or like capturing an image of a rig. But if you want to build a rig from scratch, I prefer the Fractal. I have not tried the new thing that the boys at Neural did.
Oh, Neural DSP?
Yeah, they've got a floorboard type deal. Now, the thing that keeps me forever hooked with Axe Effects is just the quality of their effects. Like you could use this with tube amps. That's what I did. Like with the Rascal Flats tour, I used tube amps and used the Fractal for my time based stuff. You know.
Do you ever get weird with your sounds, like with the synth block and all that stuff? Because I love experimenting.
Yeah, not in a Rascal Flats gig, you know, but you know, on my own time, I do. It's like I've really got into lately is kind of emulating these old school style recording techniques with just an Axe Effects left and right out. One of my favorite tones of all time is the Four Unlawful Carnal Balance era Van Halen, those two records.
The
Hagar era, the Carnal Knowledge and the Balance era. Things, gotcha, songs gotcha. Like Sitting on Top of the World, Pound Cake, Right Now, stuff like that.
Yes.
Ed recorded Wet Dry Wet. He had one, you know, basically to do that in real life, you have to have three power amps, one source of preamp, usually at like the preamp of a head, and then your effects will be left and right and your dry signal will be in the middle. That's how you record that. So if I wanted to record that in my house and upload that, I would have three inputs into my UA. You know what I'm saying? I'd have left, right, and dry.
Okay.
I was obsessed with trying to figure out how to do it in an Axe Effects, because when you listen to the record, it's just left and right. You know what I'm saying? But you're hearing the dry in the middle because of stereo imaging, right?
Okay.
So I got into like that. I feel like I got pretty close on it. Did a video on it if anybody's interested. And I also did one last week. That was the Kill Switch Engage double tracked, because you know in that era, you know, the only way you could get those tones were to double track your guitars, right? And I was like, well, what if you want to do that and be the only guitar player? You know, so I got in there and did a patch on that. So I've been more using the Fractal to emulate recording techniques. If you're the only guitar player in the band, you know what I'm saying?
Makes sense. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. It's been a minute, but last year I was very, it was kind of a, off time for me last year, not pandemic related. And I kept myself busy by experimenting with my Axe FX, like most ambient, like synth keyboard sort of sounds.
Yeah.
That's what I was asking. Do you ever play around with the keyboard with the synth block?
Yeah, I really think that stuff's amazing. One of the things that I've really gotten into is some of the more like crystalline style reverbs and delays. I know I really enjoy the Strymon pedals, and yes. One of the reverbs I've got some really cool things you can do with it. And live, I keep going back to this because I'm ready to play on the road again, but like live, I'm trying to like set up things that I can do in an analog scenario with pedal board and develop some of that soundscape stuff. But yeah, obviously yes. It's fractal. My fractal stays pretty much like racked up in my studio. It's just like, it's home.
Right.
But I mean, of course you could do it live. No problem. But for me, it's, you know, that's just the way I use it.
I'll send you some of my patches for you to check out.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. If you're a pedal fan like I am, or maybe a listener out there is a pedal fan, I just got in the Universal Audio pedals. I hadn't had much time to play with them, so I can't really speak on.
They have pedals?
Oh, they just came out. And
I did not know that.
They're so far, they're amazing. Like,
what do they have?
I use them on
kind of pedals.
They did, it's all time based stuff. They did one that's a reverb, one that's a like modulation, and then one okay. that's a delay. So,
you know, what's really good is New Neighbor Audio. Have you heard of New Neighbor?
I've not messed with any of that stuff.
They are, and I've been an artist of theirs for years. Brian New Neighbor, he's like, I was referred to them by Devin.
Cool.
You should check them out. Like, really amazing, like, reverbs. Like, I remember hitting up Devin, I asked him, a good reverb pedal to use with distortion, because, you know, Devin's got this, you know, what he calls like a wall of sound sort of,
right,
you know, signature tone. And so he said, check out New Neighbor. And I did. And, you know, they're really, Brian New Neighbor is like the nicest guy. You know, he treats me like, you know, like I'm Devin. And at the time I was, you know, I played for some unknown pop artist, you know, I wasn't known, but he took me in kind of and treated me no different. And he's, you know, the nicest guy, really good company. I think you really dig their, you should check out their new wet reverb pedal. That's what it's called. New Neighbor Wet or something like that. But anything of theirs is good. I highly recommend them.
That's cool, man. I need to check it out. I've definitely been enjoying pedals, over the past couple of years. I don't know why.
Do you feel like we're losing the essence of pedals now because of everything being like digital and plugins? Do you think we're losing that, you know?
Oh, I don't know about the community. I can't answer for anybody else, but there's something very magical to me about touching a pedal and it having a knob and turning that knob.
Right.
With that said, I love the Fractal Axe Editor because the last thing I want to do in the Fractal is like turn knobs and scroll through menus. But for me personally, I've been getting into old, crazy old amps and stuff. Like, I've got some really great tube amps here at the house. And
what are you working with now?
I've got a pretty good little fleet here. I've got a all original 1963 deluxe reverb. I've got a couple of the Surbellas, a Bogner Shiva. I've got my Guitar Tech's 1971 Plexi, or 1971 Super Bass. I've got a Sir Hedgehog, a Diesel Herbert, an EVH 5153, and the Synergy modules. So
those are nice.
Yeah. So I've got a pretty good little, and some of those little Rev lunchbox amps. I got a couple.
I love Rev amps.
Those I love. I love what Derek and those guys do up at Rev too. So shout out to them for sure. But I've just gotten to where it's like, man, it's really amazing to like get a pedal and put it on an amp and turn that up. Like that feet. Like there's just, I think
it's
maybe.
Real.
I think too. Real. It's in the nature of the kind of shows I've been doing pre-pandemic. Like some of the last shows I did, you know, it's like I was playing with guys like Joe. Like he came to my camp, my Woodshed guitar experience, and he was one of the guest artists. And, you know, Andy Timmons, you know, these guys, when they plug in and they hit a chord, it's just like, oh, it fills the room up. It's magical, you know, and I've leaned into that more now. as it seems like a lot of the community has leaned more into using modelers and things to recreate, or even let like their laptops control the effects, right. MIDI right. syncing to the time code and all that stuff. That's really great for other people, but that's not really where my passion is right now. So I'm right. just kind of, again, to go back to the top of the episode, I'm just trying to chase what makes me feel really good.
And that's working
out. And right now it's just like, man, this old Marshall from 1971 that's all cracked and weird and ugly. And dude, you crank it up with a little overdrive on it. God, it sounds good.
It seems like amps, like kind of like the player is alive and has feeling. Like,
yeah,
feeling.
They tell you what to play. And I love that about guitars too. Like, some of my most played guitars are obviously my signature models. But I've got a Collings 335 kind of thing. And then I've got a Sir, like Strat copy, and right. I play the crap out of those because they all three, signature tellies that I have, and the Strat copy, the Sir Strat and the Collings 335, they all tell me to play differently, you know, and right. there's something magical about that versus having 15 of the same guitar and the same finish.
Right.
Finish. I mean,
what was that one amp? What's that one boutique amp that is super expensive? It's like a ridiculous amount. It's like 200 some odd grand. Do you know what I'm talking about? It starts like a B or,
it's not the Dumbles, right?
Dumble. Yes. What are your thoughts on that? Those.
Oh, I've played a handful of them. I've played probably four or five of them.
Is it worth the money?
First time. Well, you got to remember, like, these amps weren't 200 grand when Alexander was selling them. You know what I'm saying? Like, to get one, Alex had to like your playing. Like, he just didn't. It wasn't a public thing.
But what makes what about him makes him so unique? And like,
well, I mean, if you love Diesel Herberts and Bogner Ubershaws, you're gonna hate a Dumble. You're gonna hate that really bad. It's gonna be the worst thing ever,
right?
Because there's no. It's not a. It's not a big compressed, overly gainy kind of thing. Like, if you want a perfect example of like Dumble-esque Dumble tones, I mean, like. Yeah, man, Robin Ford, you know, right. Joe uses them, Larry Carlton, you know, it's like some of that kind of tone. It's real right. chewy. It'll expose your flaws in your playing because there's not a ton of compression, not a ton right. of gain, you know. It's a, I don't want to sound like an elitist or anything. I certainly don't want to sound that way, but it's definitely a player's amp. Like, you have to be able to drive or it will not sound good. Plugging a Fender Telecaster into a Fender Twin. That right there is the recipe that will separate the cream to the top because right, it's the right, most right. unforgiving thing you can ever play. But you know, I've watched Guthrie Govan plug into like a little clean amp with no overdrive and you know a Strat copy or you know whatever, and him just light it up. And you're just
if
like,
you're a legit player, you can make anything sound good.
That's the point, right? Is being aware of your own playing, and when you get to those levels and you're self aware of your own playing, you can start playing to the gear that you're playing on. And that's right. why I have a 1963 Deluxe Reverb sitting next to a Bogner Shiva. They're nothing alike.
Right, I mean, right.
In no way are they alike, you know.
And making something sound good doesn't necessarily mean shredding. You know, that's something a lot of that people yeah. have to understand that.
And you're not the licks that you play on rig A are not going to work on the licks that you play on rig B. Like, I mean, the open string country, right. ballady stuff, even some of the Eric Johnson stuff's not going to work on high gain tone. Just like, you know, if you're trying to play My Curse by Killswitch, you're not going to get that done on a twin. It's not going to happen.
No.
You know what I mean? Now, if you have a twin with a pretty sick distortion pedal, yeah, you can do it. You know?
A metal zone?
I don't know, man. Get that metals on the Brian Wampler, you know, JHS, and let them mod it. Then you might be able to get in somewhere.
Right. But you know, it's going back to what I was saying, like amps are alive. And the reason why, like you're not going to, like, I think you said like a Diesel, like you're not going to, you know, you're not going to hear Eric Johnson, like play amazing, like on a Diesel's. Cause I feel like players like Eric Johnson like rely on like what's his like go to amp?
Well, I mean, like it depends on which Eric Johnson tone you're talking about. In general, my brain puts them into three. You have the clean tone that's like trademark or Manhattan. You have the big fat,
like,
you
know, his lead
woman tone or whatever, that kind of thing.
Like
that,
Cliff's Dover sort
of. Yeah, the Cliff's tone. Yeah, I mean, everybody goes to that. I mean, that's just like an old Marshall 100 watt
so with a motor drop.
But it's not, that's the thing you got to remember. It's not the gain. All the gain's not coming from the amp.
You're using a
Butler tube driver. Right. So it's like Eric's hands, first of all. Second of all, it's a little bit of gain from the tube driver. It's a little bit more gain from like the Echoplex, at least it was back then. Right. And then it's the amp itself that's loud. You know what I mean? Right. And the flip to getting a lot of those type of tones is it's Marshall's, but the EQs are not dimed. That's like a super like rookie mistake. Like dime everything on a Marshall, and that's what it sounds like. It's like, ah. No
more gain, the better, right?
Well, even then, you're not getting that kind of gain. Like the Brown sound was like not gainy by any standard. It's the fact that it's just like it was compressed, and that's what allowed Ed to cruise. And then on the flip, it's Ed Van Halen, so you know, right. Great rock and roll player of all time. So.
Yeah, it's the player, it's the feel,
it's the player, and it's always the player. I mean, I'll die on that hill. If somebody wants to argue with me online, you can email me andy@andywoodmusic.com. I will die on the hill. It's the player. It's always the player. It's always going to be the player.
Yeah. And I said, Steve Ray Vaughan will always be my favorite player. Like, as far as feel goes, like, I think you can't touch him when it comes to feel. Like, it's like he's another player where you know his playing when you hear it, you know?
It's instant.
And he's one of those players where he didn't have a whole bunch of game, you know? He had a badass, like, raw tone. You know, he had a couple tricks up his sleeve, you know, like using dual amps and, you know, the combination, you know, gave him his signature sound, but it wasn't his tone. Well, it was his tone, but it was his hands. It was the way how he played those licks, the way how he bent the strings, you know, that I feel like a lot of novice players or, you know, green musicians, and maybe it's 'cause they don't know better, you know, because that's how you learn. You know, you go through the
that's learning it, right? you gotta learn, and I think one of the things I would say is, like, to anybody that's climbing the mountain and you're early in your journey of climbing the mountain of music,
steep ass mountain,
spend some time on those vibratos and bends and note delivery. Yes. get you a mountain record, with no pun intended, and listen to Leslie West. Like,
right,
get you some bends, get some Gary Moore in your diet, you know,
right? Because that's what separates the okay players
from the and it doesn't matter the genre. Yeah, like, you can listen to Steve Vai and you can listen to, you know, Zakk Wylde and Killswitch. They all have great vibratos and bends. Like, I remember hearing Killswitch's version of Holy Diver, and I was like, wow, he's got a killer vibrato. It's so good.
And that goes back to what we're saying, the feel. Because that's
where and then Stevie Ray Vaughan and Joe Bonamassa and Frank Gabali, like, they've all got great vibrato. Don Felder is one of my favorite subtle musical players, obviously, like Hotel California, but like all of Don Felder's playing, man. Joe Walsh, like,
right.
I challenge anybody to play Funk 49 and get it sound like Joe.
Right.
You can't do it. It's the lick that everybody can play that nobody can play, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, listen, bro, I won't keep it for much longer, but I really appreciate you coming on board and having a talk of music with me.
Oh, of course, man. It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And I'll I want to send you my Axe FX patches. I want you to tell me what you think. And I'll send you I have an external hard drive with like folders dedicated. I have like folders with subfolders within subfolders, like dedicated to different categories and genres and stuff. And, I would love to see what you think, and, you know, because I'm really trying to experiment. I actually want to put out an act like preset packs. So maybe you know, you can tell me, you know, what you think, and if you think it's usable or perfect, you know what I'm saying. So
yeah, very cool.
Cool, brother. Well, listen, thank you again so much, and we'll talk soon. Okay, brother.
All right, my friend. Talk soon.
All right, take care, brother.
See you.